Hey, everybody. Welcome to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. And today we are going to dive right into it. We have got a guest who I know a lot of our listeners out there are raising teenage girls. And that can be one of the most challenging times there is for a mom. I have a little girl who has just turned 6, and I can't believe she's 6. And it frightens me to think about the teenage years because there's a lot that can happen. There's a lot that you deal with. And we were all teenage girls ourselves, and we know we weren't necessarily the easiest to deal with at that phase of life. But now, these days, things have changed, and they're in my mind, a lot more challenges that we have to deal with, a lot more that we didn't deal with when we were kids. So here to help navigate us through that is Dr. Lisa DeMore. She's director of the internationally renowned Laurel School Center for Research on Girls. She's a psychotherapist exclusively for teenage girls and a regular columnist for the New York Times Motherload. She's going to explain to us what's going on, prepare us for what's to come, and let us know when it's time to worry. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Now, your new book is entitled Untangled, Guiding Teenage Girls Through the 7 Transitions into Adulthood, correct?
That's right.
Okay, so 7 transitions into adulthood. Who knew that that was even a thing? I didn't realize. So explain that to us.
Sure. So these are 7 transitions that I'm articulating for the first time. And the point of the book is to try to bring order to chaos. Because like you said, a lot of people feel like they're scared of having a teenage girl in the house. They're apprehensive about their young daughters becoming teenagers. And I think that a lot of families feel like they don't understand their adolescent daughter. And what I'm articulating in this book is that the reason their daughters are so complicated is that they have 7 different things happening over the course of adolescence that turn them from girls into grown-ups. And that when we can think about teenagers in this way, when we can appreciate that there's a huge amount of development happening and understand what that developmental, those developmental tasks are, we can take teenagers much less personally than we often do, and we can also find ways to be more helpful to them.
Okay, so this helps us really understand what's going on with them from a more of a clinical perspective.
Yeah, or I would say developmental, there's sort of always an inside world to kids, things that kids are working through because of the ages they happen to be. And I am arguing there are these 7 universal transitions that teenage boys go through also, and that you and I went through also. And they are, and I'll tell you what they are, they're one per chapter in the book, and the book goes in this order. So it's parting with childhood, joining a new tribe, harnessing emotions, contending with adult authority, planning for the future, entering the romantic world, and caring for themselves. So those are the 7 things that I'm saying girls are working their way through during the teenage years.
That's a lot. And I know some middle-aged women who are still working their way through some of these things.
Well, actually, it's interesting that you should say that, because the way that I got this kind of thinking was in training graduate students, because one of the hats that I wear is that I'm a clinical instructor at Case Western Reserve University here in Cleveland, and I train the graduate students in clinical psychology. And they, because they're graduate students, they work at a low-income clinic, which means that they often get very, very complex and chaotic cases. Mm-hmm. And to try to help them work through what they needed to do with their clients, I started to think, okay, well, what are the buckets of adolescence? What are the tasks that girls have to accomplish? And that helped us narrow down where our energies belonged. And I will tell you, in my own clinical practice, it has made it so much easier for me to focus on where a girl really needs help and not get distracted by other things. And I am with you. I will sometimes see 25, 26-year-olds in my practice and think, wow, you never really sorted out how to contend with adult authority, or you never really took ownership of caring for yourself. So it doesn't matter that you're 25, you're still managing some things that really should have been resolved in adolescence.
I like that you have these categories, these buckets that we are able to look at things in, because as a parent, it helps you figure out what am I responsible for helping guide her through so that she can come out the other side of these teenage years having achieved these things. Because that, to me, nothing's more heartbreaking to me, like you said, than seeing a 27-year-old who's still working through stuff that they should have gotten taken care of at 16. That to me is, oh gosh, I have failed you in some way. Let me try to rectify this. So I like the fact that this is broken down for us so that we can look at what we're responsible for, making sure we guide them through properly and get them out the other side. You know, it's kind of like a checklist saying, okay, well, I feel like she's got that. I feel like she's got that. I feel like she's got that. You know, you can kind of feel like your work here has been accomplished somewhat. So we're going to come back with more about all of this concept with these seven different transitions right after this. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio. Stay with us.
Calling all autocross enthusiasts. Here is your chance to ride with pro autocross competitors at Autocross for Kids to benefit the Austin Hatcher Foundation for Pediatric Cancer, empowering the children and families faced with pediatric cancer. Come out to the Good Guys Rod and Custom Association McGuire's Del Mar Nationals in Del Mar, California on April 1st through the 3rd. We'll see you there.
Everybody, welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and before the break, we were getting to know Dr. Lisa Damore. She is the author of this great new book, Untangled, Guiding Teenage Girls Through the Seven Transitions into Adulthood, and she was kind of walking us through that process. Thanks so much for being here today with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So now, let's look at the in-the-trenches application of what you have outlined for us in this book. I think that universally, moms of 13-year-old girls see that eye roll and want to reach out and strangle. How do you handle the eye roll and the hand on the hip and the fine? What do you do with that?
Okay. Well, one of the things, I'm actually fascinated by the teenage eye roll because I think it serves lots and lots of different purposes. So the one you're describing, which is the hand on the hip with the fine, usually I think girls bust that out when they are going along with something the parent has asked them to do that they don't want to do. And, you know, that happens in adolescence where we'll say, look, you got to go change clothes. You can't wear that because we're going out to dinner, or you can't go out until you empty the dishwasher, or things like that. And when kids are little, you know, or even late, you know, childhood, age 10, 11, they sort of give in. You know, they feel like we're the boss and they have to go along with that. And one of the real challenges of being a teenager is that suddenly you're questioning authority all the time. You're like, wait, why are you telling me to do what to do? And teenagers don't always like that. And sometimes I think they can use an eye roll to kind of voice their objection while still doing what they've been asked to do. And I think if we can think about it in that way, it's actually a pretty elegant move. You know, it's a pretty impressive way for the girl to say, I don't really want to, but I'm gonna. And,
right.
You know, not the sort of a, you know, a goody two shoes who gives in, but also not be a kid who, you know, refuses to do what's being asked. You know, and I think one of the things I've been thinking about a lot lately is, you know, we say to our teenagers all of the time, you got to think for yourself. You can't do things just because your friends are doing them. Like, you've got to do what, you know, your mind tells you to do. And we can't say that to them and say, except for when you're at home, right? But when you're home, just do what I tell you. Like, you don't get to have it both ways.
Right.
And so I think in some ways an eye roll can be a really efficient solution to that problem. Like, I don't want to, but I will.
Okay,
and I'm letting you know I don't want to, and yet I'm going to.
That brings up for me the challenging authority and accepting authority issue, because I feel like this is a very important thing for teenagers, knowing when to challenge authority and when not to. You know, I don't want my kids to just have a blanket acceptance that every adult knows what's best and you should just respect that. Because I don't think that they all do. And how do you teach them that delineation of when they're to use their judgment with authority?
That's a great question. I mean, you know, because one of the things that really happens at 13 and 14 is that kids start to realize, like, some grown-ups know what they're talking about and some grown-ups are actually pointing you in the wrong direction. And it's time to start questioning, you know, who's asking you to do what and why. And they also start to realize, you know, that there are grown-ups who they have as teachers or coaches or other people who they don't like, you know, and they don't agree with. And yet they still have to find a way to make it work with those people.
Right.
So I think, you know, one of the things that is really helpful as a parent of a teenager is that when a teenager comes home and is complaining about their math teacher or their coach or whatever, You know, if the situation's really bad, you know, and the teenager needs to be pulled out of it, you know, if the person is harassing or awful or totally unfair or makes it impossible for anybody to succeed, you know, I think we can support our teenagers in trying to sort it out. But if that doesn't work, we probably need to step in.
Mm-hmm.
But short of that, and most things are short of that, you know, our job is to say, look, I'm sure you're right about your math teacher. You know, I'm sure that she doesn't get your stuff back on time. And I'm sure that her explanations are confusing. How are you going to figure out how to make this work? And those are really prime moments to accomplish a couple of things. One is to say to our teenagers, I believe you. Right? I'm not going to fight with you and just take that person's side because they're an adult. Like, I believe you. And I'll tell you, my experience is that teenagers are usually very accurate in their assessment of adults.
Mm-hmm.
But then the second thing we can accomplish is to say, look, you're always going to have teachers you don't like, and then you're going to have bosses you don't like, and then you're going to have colleagues that you don't like. And the most successful people can find ways to do their best work anyway. So
yep.
We're going to take this year with this teacher you can't stand, and we're going to figure out what it takes for you to succeed in this class, despite the fact that this grown-up may be somewhat ridiculous.
Yeah. I love that advice. Because what I'm seeing in my peer group is a lot of that knee-jerk, well, I'm going to fix this. And the parent jumps in and removes the child from the situation or takes on the adult or all of that without that process that you just mentioned happening first. And I think that that's a very important life skill that we all need to teach our kids. So thanks for that great advice. We're going to be back with more right after this. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and you're listening to Working Mother Radio.
Don't be a wantrepreneur. If you're ready to become an entrepreneur, Benetrends Financial can help. Benetrends' proven and innovative funding strategies help real entrepreneurs like you get the funding you need quickly, safely, and economically so you can finally purchase that business of your dreams. Get started today. Call 866-423-6387 or visit Benetrends.com. That's Benetrends.com. Benetrends Financial, funding for the life of your business.
And we are back with more Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are speaking with Dr. Lisa DeMoor. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Now, before we go on with our conversation, because I'm really enjoying it and I have a lot more I want to ask you, can you let our listeners know where they can find you online or in social media if they want to learn more about your book or what it is you're up to?
Absolutely. So I have a website, which is drlisademoor.com. So drlisademoor.com. And there's links on that website to my Facebook page and my Twitter handle. My Twitter handle is @LDeMoor. And those are resources that are available for everyone. And there's a sign up for a newsletter I have if people want me to, you know, send my articles directly to their email box. But that's the way that people can be plugged into what I'm writing, where I'll be speaking, and things like that.
Wonderful. Thank you. So if you have a teenage girl that you are feeling real challenged with right now, it might be a great idea to continue this flow of information on your own after this interview is over, because I do think that there's so much to cover. And of course, we're not going to have enough time to cover it all. And also her book, Untangled, Guiding Teenage Girls Through the Seven Transitions into Adulthood, is available as well. Now, I want to ask you about a big concern for a lot of moms of teenage daughters is eating disorder. How do you identify a healthy preoccupation with making sure that you know they're staying fit and they're staying healthy? How do you see the difference between that and something that may be turning into an unhealthy preoccupation with their bodies?
Right. This is a really scary thing for parents, because on the one hand, we want our girls to be fit and to eat lots of fruits and vegetables. But we don't want to say anything that might accidentally trigger an eating disorder, because those are really frightening and they're very dangerous disorders. So what I'll tell you is that not every girl who diets goes on to develop an eating disorder, but every girl who develops an eating disorder starts by dieting.
Mm-hmm.
So if girls are dieting, for me, I already have a flag going up, you know, unless she's working with a doctor, you know, because maybe she is overweight in an unhealthy way. There's no reason for a teenage girl to be dieting. And sometimes girls diet in ways that adults recognize, and sometimes what they do is they drop out food categories. So it's not uncommon for girls to become vegetarian. And again, that can be really, really healthy, but it also is often a step that girls who go on to become eating disordered will take. Mm-hmm. So I'm always interested when a girl says, I'm going to be a vegetarian, or I'm going to be a vegan, or I won't eat white foods anymore, or no more sugar for me, you know, without any medical reason for that. And what's interesting to me is girls say lots of things, and what they say and what they do doesn't always line up. So I actually don't worry if a girl says, no more sweets for me, and then it's Halloween and she's all over the candy. That, to me, I feel like she's great. She's fine. What's interesting to me, you know, is if a girl says, no more sweets for me, and then it's a family birthday and she won't even touch the cake, for me, flags are going up. Right. So I think it's, you know, a really good early sign, helpful early sign of eating disorders is when girls start dropping in rules about food out of nowhere and they really observe those rules. I think all parents should be mindful of that. And then I think the next step, you know, is to watch her weight, watch how she's eating. And if there's an issue, I would find a pediatrician who specializes in evaluating eating disorders and get a pediatrician involved, because this is a place you don't want to have a power struggle with your daughter about food. Because actually girls hold all the power when it comes to food. They can eat or not eat whatever they want. You want to make it about health. You want to make it about well-being, and getting a neutral medical evaluation is a really nice way to keep it where it belongs.
Good advice. Yeah, you know, it's going to the professionals and making sure that they've got a close eye on it, I think, is a really smart thing to do. But I like those tips on what to look for, because I hadn't heard that particular route to identifying a possibility of an eating disorder before. So thank you for that. Now, the last question I want to ask you is about test anxiety. A lot of girls get themselves real wound up and freeze when they're taking tests, or get so stressed out prior to a test that they're not even themselves anymore. How do you handle that with your child?
Well, it's interesting. You know, testing is way more prevalent in our schools than it ever has been before, and girls tend to be very serious students, you know, especially in broad strokes. They tend to be more serious about school than boys. And so when tests come along, they can get pretty amped up. What is interesting to me is girls often talk about test anxiety as if it were something that they cannot control at all. You know, they'll talk about it like it's an inherited trait, like, oh, I have test anxiety, you know, in the same way as if, like, and I have blue eyes and I have.
Right.
And the reality is we actually know a lot about test anxiety, and there's a lot we can do to help students with it. So the first question, if a student complains about test anxiety, the first question we have to ask is, did you study? Because when we actually ask that question, a surprising number of students say, well, no, not really. You know, at which point we can say,
right. And that's why
really
I'm so anxious, because I know I'm going to fail.
Yeah. Exactly, because you're not ready for the test. So when you study, you will feel much, much better. You know, and then the next thing we can do, they say, I absolutely studied. Then you can say, well, how did you study? And one of the things we know from the research is that students overwhelmingly study by highlighting their notes over their reading and going over their notes. Mm-hmm. And this tends to be a very ineffective strategy for preparing for tests, because it's very passive. They don't really engage with the material. Mm-hmm. So then what, you know, if they've just done that, they're still really not ready for the test, because the test is not going to ask them to highlight material and go over things. The test is going to ask them to work with the content.
Right.
So I would say, if you really want to take test anxiety down, what you say to a girl is, go get a sample test. Either make one up, have your friend make one up for you, and you make one up for her. Or find one online. And it's amazing how easy it is to find tests online in the subject area girls are looking at. And then say to them, why don't you go in the kitchen and sit down and take that in the amount of time you'll be given in class. Let's see how it goes. Let's see what you do and don't know. And let's practice that at home, so that by the time you show up for the test, you've kind of already done this.
And
you will
see
anxiety plummet under those conditions.
I love that. That one's awesome. Thank you so much for joining us today. I feel like I've learned a lot. I hope that our listeners feel the same way. And again, go visit Dr. Lisa DeMore online to get more information about her. And again, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Bettina Bush, your host. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more Working Mother Radio right after this.
Do you want to make people feel good and have the opportunity to make a ton of money? Fortunately, fitness is a $32 billion a year industry. And at Crunch Fitness, we make people feel good in a big way. We like when our members leave happy, sweaty, and totally exhausted from an awesome workout. We also like smart, ambitious franchisees that are passionate about growing with us. Let your money work and work out for you with a Crunch franchise. visit crunchfranchise.com. Get in touch with a whole lot of awesome.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we have with us today one of my favorite guests. She's actually one of the first guests I ever interviewed for Working Mother Radio, and she got me addicted to this show because she is just such a wealth of information and knowledge, and I love having her. Thanks so much for joining us, Betty Spence, president of NAFI.
Hi. Good to be with you again, Bettina.
Thanks. It's great to have you. Now, I know you have so much always going on over there at NAFI. You know, in case you're not familiar with the acronym, it's the National Association of Female Executives, and you guys do incredible work. And I, you know, you're part of the whole Working Mother family. But I know that you have some really awesome events coming up. So let's talk about that.
Well, we love March because we get to celebrate. It's not just International Women's Day month. But it's also the time when NAFI honors the top companies for executive women. And we have our big event coming up on March 17th in New York when the 50 companies will come to be lauded by us and to be awarded. And in addition to that, we also have what we call the NAFI Roundtable, in which one woman from each one of the very of the top companies comes to sit and talk about issues related to women's advancement. It is one of the very top women from each one of those companies who comes to join the NAFI Roundtable, someone who is in the C-suite, like the chief tax officer or the general counsel or the chief marketing officer or the chief operating officer, the very, very senior level women, or else someone who is running a major division. These are women with responsibility for bringing in revenue to the organization. And we all put our heads together and figure out what the next steps are for women's advancement and come up with some amazing ideas. And this time, Bettina, we are focusing on moving beyond rivalry so that women are advocating for other women.
Oh, wow. That's kind of pulling the lid off of something that a lot of people don't like to talk about.
Indeed, it is. It's something that I like to think that our women aren't experiencing because they're doing as well as they are. But it has surfaced over the last year and a half that these women are experiencing this when they get to the very high levels in the company. So we've decided to tackle it head on. And we are going to be having women tell some of their stories. We're going to be talking about what we do in the way of acts of omission and of commission to either not support or to act in some way that is detrimental to another woman's career, so that we come out of it with ideas for, I mean, first of all, recognizing that we're doing it, because a lot of us may not even know that we're doing it,
mm-hmm.
and then having each other's backs, making sure that we are succeeding. Because the more women succeed, the better the environment is going to be at our corporations for women to succeed.
Absolutely. And that, you know, benefits our country as a whole, which I think everybody's concerned about these days, is what's going to benefit the country as a whole. So I think that's a fantastic conversation. I think a lot of our listeners would love to be a fly on the wall in that room.
Well, I'm waiting to hear what's going on. I mean, I'm so excited about it. I'm so excited to hear what they're going to say and where we're going to come out on it, because, you know, you just don't know in a situation like this.
You really don't.
This is an environment where the women, many of the women come back year after year for this NAFI roundtable, and there is a lot of trust in the room. So they are willing to as it were, expose their weak points and grow together, and they support each other wonderfully. This is a group that is really becoming a community of women who make commitments themselves for what they're going to do when they go back to the organization to help other women. And they work together to support each other in doing it, to make sure that that they're helping each other move toward this goal. It's a wonderful, wonderful group of women, and I just love it. And we're only able to do it because we bring in women from the very top companies for executive women. So I'd love to tell you a little bit about them, if I might.
I would love to hear about them. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with that list right after this. I am Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio. Stay with us.
Across the globe, a child goes blind every 5 seconds. We live in a culture saturated with visual cues, but for some, the world is a blur. Since 1997, the Little Rock Foundation has been leading innovative social programs, advancing legislation, and providing information and education to those affected by visual impairment. Gain the resources you need or make a donation today to the Little Rock Foundation. Find us on the web at tlrf.org. You can make a difference.
Welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are continuing our conversation with Betty Spence, president of NAFI. Thanks so much for being here with us today, Betty.
My pleasure, Bettina. Love to have the opportunity to talk about what's going on for women in our corporations with you.
Well, you know, I love that you've been doing these roundtables year after year after year, you know, and it seems as though every year that I've been a part of the Working Mother family, so much great insight comes out of them. And so, you know, it really does feel like progress. And I love that. I think that's part of, you know, the pride that comes from being a part of this team is that there's real progress that gets made and real forward motion. And we talk about things that people don't necessarily want to talk about but need to be talked about, or else they're never going to get fixed or they're never going to change. And I just – thanks for facilitating these conversations and these meetings, because I really feel like you do make a huge impact, Betty.
Thank you, Bettina. I find that the women who come are very brave the way they will tackle these things. The event that we did in December for the NAFI Roundtable, we meet twice a year. The event in December, we focused on building a partnership between white women and women of color for mutual success. A year ago, we focused on building male allies, creating an opportunity for men and women to become partners for women's advancement. And from that has grown an initiative that we're doing called Men as Allies. And our next event is this coming May in New York, and we would love to have companies send a pair or more each to this event, where we will be able to work with them on how to figure out what's holding women back and why, and have the men recognize these things and move forward.
That sounds like a very powerful event. I think that, you know, just people who are listening to this who would like to get involved and go, I think it'd be so fascinating to watch the growth that comes out of attending something like that when you know, you have such a clear mission and a clear goal and you know, and you're in a space where everybody's working towards the same thing. So if you are interested in that, definitely, you know, check out the NAFI website, direct your, you know, whoever it is that makes these decisions in your company to the NAFI website and get involved and find out how you can take part in this event. Now let's talk about these, the best companies, this event that's coming up on March 17th, because that's a prestigious list to be on. What do you need? If I'm a company and I'm thinking, wow, I'd love to get on a list like that, what qualifies you for this honor?
Every company has to have at least two women on the board. You can't even apply if you haven't got two women on the board. And then we look at the numbers. It's very much a list about numbers. We look at how the women on the board are doing. What's the percentage of women on the board? What's the percentage of women who are reporting directly to the CEO? Is there a woman CEO? What's the percentage of women senior executives? And then with a lot of emphasis on how many women are in the positions where they are in operations jobs, where they're running divisions and are responsible for bringing in revenue for the organization. We also, of course, look at the programs and policies related to sponsorship and training, accountability for women's advancement, and work life as well, in order to be able to support women moving ahead. But those are the fundamentals. And this year we have a very exciting roster of top 10 companies. Would you like to hear them?
Would love to hear them.
They are Ernst & Young, Johnson & Johnson, IBM, Fleischmann Hillard, Abbott, Procter & Gamble, MassMutual, Marriott, and L'Oreal. And what I love about that list is how many different industries that they cover. They cover pharma, they cover household products, they cover financial services, it's really remarkable that all of these companies are doing this kind of work. However,
wow.
I have a caveat. You want to hear what the caveat is about this list?
Yes.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, we haven't noticed that the numbers are changing too much. The major movement that we're seeing is that there are many more women who are, many more companies that have five or more women on the board. But across the board, we're not seeing that there are many more women on boards in general at our top companies or in the Fortune 500. Similarly, we haven't seen much movement in women in the executive suite, either in the Fortune 500 or at our top companies. There seems to be a sort of stagnation that's going on that companies need to focus on and deal with deliberately in order to increase the numbers of women. Because as you know, and as anyone knows who's paying attention, firms with more women at the top are more profitable. There was a great study that came out in February by the Peterson Institute that found that a profitable firm with 30% women leaders can expect a minimum 15% higher profitability than companies with no women leaders. 30% leaders is all you need in the way of women in order to have a 15% or more higher profitability. What CEO wouldn't want to do that?
I feel as though, you know, this whole there's this broken record scenario going on here. Like, it just makes sense. What are we not understanding? For me, when you say that it's become stagnant, it's mind blowing to me. If you're someone who bases everything on statistics and numbers and facts, you know, and not just your gut. It all points to we need more women in the C-suite. We need more women in the boardroom.
And that's part of what we're tackling with our NAPI roundtable coming up and what we're doing with the Men as Allies initiative, that we are trying to surface and change the deep-rooted beliefs that seem to be underlying the choices that our companies are making about moving women into these higher-level jobs. We had an amazing aha at our event, Men as Allies event last summer, in which it became clear that men don't listen to women. Men tune women out. They tune them out when they're at the board table, even though they may be paying them $250,000 to sit at the board table. They may not be hearing their ideas. They just don't hear it. And they don't do it deliberately.
It's just what happens.
The water that they swim in. People don't listen to women. So we're working very hard on making men realize that they're doing it, bringing it into their conscious reality so that they start paying attention to women's voices. Because without women's perspective, you are missing innovation. You are missing the strategic leadership that women bring. So we're very excited about this opportunity, and we hope that a lot of companies will come to our Men as Allies event in May this year.
Yeah, this sounds incredible. Now, I know you have a lot of events that happen throughout the year, but this one's the closest. It's March 17th. But what else? What do you have coming up on the horizon that people need to be keeping their eyes out on or drawing attention to their, you know, their diversity officers or their HR, you know, whoever it is the green light person for attending these events?
We have our big multicultural women's conference in July.
My favorite! You have to go to that. If you have not been, you need to go.
It's fabulous, and we're just in the process of starting to plan that. We have a very exciting agenda coming up for that. And then for NAPI, we have our event again for our which we do every December for the NAPI Women of Excellence. And starting on June 1st, the nominations will open for that. So we're asking companies to check out the NAPI website on June 1st and decide who they want to nominate for one of these awards. We give about 10 to 12 awards every year for women who are outstanding in various categories, like mentoring and like sponsoring and like for women's health care and global women's champion and so on. So check that out. We'd love to have companies make wonderful nominations for these awards.
I'm sure our listeners are thinking of someone right now that they'd love to see nominated. So make sure you bear that in mind and get that woman nominated and submitted, because if you think there's someone worthy of that honor, please don't let it pass her by. We're going to be back right after this. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio.
On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street legal replacement tire yet, the new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance.
You are listening to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are having a great conversation with Betty Spence, president of NAFI. Thanks so much for being here and sharing all the exciting things you are up to with us, Betty.
And we are up to a lot right now with our celebration of the NAFI Top Companies for Executive Women, and I would love to tell you about what some of our great companies are doing for women.
Let's hear it.
Okay. One of the things that really struck me this time was the number of companies now that have a greater proportion of women who are senior managers than their employees might indicate. That's always a way to tell. If there are more women who are in these senior positions than there are women who are actually working in the organization, you know they're doing something right for women. And so I always recommend to those looking for new places to work that they check out companies like that. And our three this year that are the most outstanding are DuPont, General Mills, and Ernst & Young. Extraordinary in the fact that they have higher proportions of women senior managers than employees. I'm also very impressed with a couple of companies for the number of women who are running their billion-dollar operations. Target has about two-thirds of its major operations being run by women.
Wow.
Well worth looking at that company as a place to work, a great place for women. A couple of other good ones are Freddie Mac and Boehringer Ingelheim, L'Oreal, and Aetna. So all of those are to be recommended as places to think about going to work for. I love what Marriott does with its Emerging Leaders Program. You'll find at Marriott that there are women who started out as chambermaids or started out as desk clerks who are now general managers of their hotels. Wonderful program that they have had in place for a while, and it's really showing progress for women. So if you have
talk about upward mobility, that's pretty amazing. Yeah, that's the kind of thing that you want to see. The fact that not only are the positions there, but the opportunity to get there is actually showing itself as, you know, it's obviously working, that you have living examples that this is not just a theory, it's something that's actually happening in the company. That's incredible.
And eminently emulatable, and I wish that other companies would do it. But I also want to call out Cardinal Health, which is a pharmaceutical company in Columbus, which is really the national leader in engaging men to advance women. Their CFO is Mike Kaufman, and he serves as the executive sponsor of their Women's Initiative Network. And has been really instrumental in making this work. They implemented this gender partnership initiative in order to create awareness of the unconscious biases that work against women. The unconscious biases that men have, such as what I was saying earlier about not listening to women. And they've been implementing things like an early sponsorship program for women. And what we see as a result of the work that's being done, and it's deep tissue work that they're doing, it's not done in a one-off thing. They actually spend a lot of time with their senior managers on this. And they are able to move past the affinity bias of, I want to promote someone who looks like me, and the risk aversion that the only people who can do it are people that you've done it with before.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not turning to the same people in times of challenge. They're also looking to women who have, as I have mentioned before, great strategic thinking talent.
I love it. Well, thank you so much, Betty, for sharing all of the incredible work that you're doing over at NAFI. And I can't wait to have you back again, because like I said, every time I speak with you, I realize that true progress is being made and the real conversations are happening. And it just makes me so proud to be a part of this Working Mother family. So thank you so much for being here and sharing it with our listeners today, Betty.
And thank you, Bettina. It's always a joy to talk with you.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for this week. Thank you so much for being here with us today at Working Mother Radio. And don't forget to check in with me on Facebook and Twitter at Bettina Bush, BettinaBush. And on Instagram, I'm Bettina Bush Official. I would love to hear from you, what you want to hear on the radio show, what you want to see on the video channel on Motherhood Corner on WorkingMother.com. We always want to hear feedback from our listeners, and we enjoy engaging with you. You can also see what I'm up to with my family and my own life as a working mom and what I'm going through on a daily basis as well. So I'd love to connect with you online. And don't forget, there is no way to be a perfect mom, but there's a million ways to be a good one. We'll see you next week.
Where does the love for a car come from? If the car is a Subaru Legacy, the answer would be the symmetrical all-wheel drive. Power goes to all four wheels all the time for optimum grip. The Subaru Boxer engine's lower center of gravity makes the Subaru Legacy more responsive around corners and gets better fuel economy than front-wheel drive competitors. What you have then is a midsize sedan with grip, handling, and enviable fuel economy. It's no wonder it turns people into people who love cars. Love. It's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.